have who do tally, or tarry, or whatever it's called. And I wanted to point out that this ordinance is specific in that it targets people who are tarrying, not people who are going to and fro in a seemingly normal manner. It's just another tool in community policing repertoire that would give the sheriff's department a chance to affect crime in our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Mike Hallgood, and I'm a student at DC Santa Cruz. I'm originally from the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm 21 years old, and I've lived in Santa Cruz for about 3 years. I consider myself a resident of Santa Cruz County. I'm registered to vote here. And I think being a resident means that I, as a student, and most of my colleagues do agree to abide by the laws that are in place here, including a curfew, if that may be the case, but I also think it's a civic duty to participate in the democratic process. I think an important aspect of the curfew that we probably should keep in mind is that with a number of exceptions and exemptions that are included in the curfew, my impression is that many of the students who are going to be hurt by the measure, the law, the power it's enforced, are the students who I was intimately associating, whether it be hanging out with friends, and have nothing to hide. I think that those are going to be the individuals who have the least motivation to lie about, you know, what their activities are. So to some extent, this is striking me as being fairly futile. I support the local community, and I support the residential groups that have concern about this. I also think that there are some constitutional issues that are brought up, specifically by tarrying, which is fairly vague, and I think that another interpretation, something they have with that term, would be freedom of association, which sounds awfully familiar to me. So, thank you.
Hi, my name is Diane Cameron. I'm also a student at UC Santa Cruz. And tonight, a lot of the talk about our youth, our young adults, has posed them as some kind of criminals. That's just the feeling I'm getting, that they are some kind of criminals, especially if they're out after 11 p.m. at night. And so that's the problem here, is that this proposal marks our youth as criminals if they are out after 11 p.m. And so any suspicious activity that they are engaged in will, in fact, cause a police officer to ask them what they are doing. So I'm not sure what this suspicious activity is, because I'm not a youth. I don't engage in the same activities I did 3 years ago. And so I don't think law enforcement are youth right now, so I don't think they understand what youth are doing at this time as well. And I'd also like the board to think about how this proposal will make our law enforcement look like to kids, especially when kids are out and maybe hanging out with their friends in a park after 11 p.m. and the law enforcement comes and says, "Hey, look, you can't be here. This is carrying. You got to go home," or something like that. What are kids going to think? Are they going to say, "Yeah, gee, he's my friend. He really likes to hang out with me," or "He's there to protect me"? I think we might say that he's not that fun to be with, and maybe we'll find somewhere else to go and hang out. So I just hope that we can think about it and try to listen to more of the youth in this room, and hopefully some of them will be speaking, and maybe we can read a letter or two from them and really try and include them in this process. I think that's important.
We are on the air, 96.3 FM. Hopefully the next talk show host hasn't come in yet, and we're going to try to squeeze into the next hour. We got guests, Red Top, Robert Flory, Eugenia Bram, Dragon's Heart, Dan Hopkins, and of course, Coxman Crow, the well-known, the Cock Crew three times, and here's Crow, he's here. Crow, say hi to all your fans out there.
Hi, fans. I hope everybody is working on dismantling world governments.
Is anything happening with you in Santa Cruz? We're actually in the middle of the Gina's case. She's facing a hearing, you may or may not know, at 315 by the Homeless Community Resource Center. And actually, I'd like your permission, Gina, to read this letter aloud. Is that acceptable? Or?
Please.
It's a letter from Karen Gillette on the issue of Gina's alleged violence at the Coral Street area, for which she's been evicted from the program for the last, what, since September? Is that right, Gina?
Yes, September 25th.
Hunker on down here.
Thanks, Chris.
Dear Gina, this is a letter from Karen Gillette, Executive Director of the Homeless Community Resource Center. When this incident occurred last September, you declined to file a complaint with our agency due to the fact that the staff did file a formal complaint against you. I checked into the incident in a very detailed manner. All the testimony of the witnesses, including those who you asked me to talk to, had the same story. Each one felt that you had started the incident physically and verbally attacked Ken, and refused to stop until the police arrived. All witnesses verified that Ken was sober, including the police. Now, you haven't really claimed that Ken was drunk, but I've heard, right?
No, I do. He smelled like alcohol that night. And it is actually rumored around the field that he does speed.
I see. But
I'll say this because I've never tried speed.
Sure. Well, okay. So you feel he was intoxicated, or you feel he'd been drinking? Or?
Yes, definitely, not all there to be slapping a barefooted woman.
Continuing this letter from Karen Gillette, and that you received from her, I guess, a couple days ago. It's dated the 9th. This incident was the last in a series of violent confrontations between yourself and HCRC and ISSP staff and the police. From your complaint, it is clear that you are not only unrepentant, but that you deny that the incidents happened at all in the way that all other witnesses describe. The verbal abuse that you have heaped upon me alone more than justifies our denial of services to you.
Aaron kicks 15-year-old women off the field. I'll never, ever, ever respect a woman.
Getting more details on that particular claim.
That's just how it is. That's just where it is. Where did she
kick 15-year-old women off the field?
Well, Buzz has been kicked off the field repeatedly. And she's.
And for what? Well,
I think she's 15.
What was the reason she was kicked off the field?
Oh, my God.
What was the reason, Gina, that she was kicked off the field?
I don't know. And personally, I don't care. I don't think there is any reason 15-year-old women should be without a home.
Continuing Karen Gillette's letter, our agency must carry liability insurance to operate legally. After discussing this matter with our insurance carrier, it is clear that we will be held both negligent and liable for any further violence on your part on our premises. As you refuse to take any steps to remedy the situation, such as obtaining counseling for your tendency to react violently, I feel that the risks to this agency are far too great to allow you to obtain services here. If you would like to take this matter further, you may appeal my decision to our board of directors. In order to begin this process, please contact Maggie McKay, our board chair, at 454-4547. She will arrange a hearing before the grievance committee.
Can I go on?
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to say that Karen, first in the letter, says that when this incident occurred in last September, you declined to file a complaint with our agency. This isn't true. I filed a complaint, or I filled out a complaint, that very next day, and I was still very sore for 2 weeks and didn't really feel like going through with it. I was really, frustrated that I only acted in self-defense and I've been treated so poorly. And so I didn't file until Robert Norris came to our house on Woodrow Street, just right down the street from Garfield Park Church. And there just happened to be a citizens committee for the homeless meeting going on. And I brought my grievance into Paul Marceau, and he made 3 copies of it, one for Robert Norris, one for himself, and one for Karen Gillette. I called the Homeless Resource Center around Thanksgiving, didn't have a place to stay, and Karen is out of town. I called again Christmas, didn't have a place to stay, Karen is out of town. I saw Paul Marceau at the Veterans Hall on Christmas Day, and he said that he had already given it to Karen. And I said, that's strange, because Karen said that she hadn't received it from you. And then, just a week ago, she said that Paul lost the grievance. And then I got on that right away and made another copy of my original.
Interrupting your discussions, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air with Bathrobes Pier.
Well, Call in, callers. We have a free and open phone line and a policy of not excluding anyone. So, okay, give us a call. Go ahead, Gina. You were saying you attempted to present your grievance.
That's it. My grievance was filed, basically. She said I declined to file, and I filed in October. You know, like I said, I needed some time to get over it. I was still very sore. Dog bite stayed there for, you know, a week and a half. And, you know, not to mention I have feelings. Like I said, I'm a sensitive person. And then when she says that I have been violent, it's just, it's untrue. If I had been violent, you know, in any unjust ways, the charges would have stuck against me, and they did not, you know. It's so unfair. I have no violent criminal history at all. In truth, I have no criminal history at all, you know. I'm, like, a pretty respectable person, truthfully. I've, like, done many things. I've had many jobs.
A known bagel burglar. Bagel getter.
Cool. I mean, I'm absolutely shocked at what she has to say. You know, violence? If she had been really worried about my violence, which wasn't there, then she should have stuck to her charges, you know, so that I would have a history, which I would have won in court. Of course, she knows this, which is why she didn't take it to court.
There are actually different reasons that people don't take things to court. Some people are uncomfortable with the use of the police, and they feel it's
well, Karen, because it's her job.
It is her job, but her job is also to try to resolve matters short of police and court action, which takes up a lot of time. And if she can administratively...
But if I was violently out of control, she would have taken it to court because I would have been violently out of control. But I was not. I was completely in control and completely confident.
Well, you certainly should have a right to a fair hearing on this issue, and I wonder...
I just don't see with no... You know, with no violent criminal history at all, how she plans to, you know, say that I have
been
violent.
This is her board, and it's more likely to be sympathetic to her explanation of things than it is to be sympathetic to you in your explanation of things. In fact,
this situation could be completely turned around. I could have like a big lawsuit against her, which is why she's doing this. I disrespect this woman in so many ways.
And my advice to you on this one, Gina, is to make sure that you have your duckies lined up, as we say, before you go in, or to get a continuance to go into the hearing today and say, I appreciate you're having this hearing for me. I need more time. I haven't been able to get
there. I'm not really going to do that because I really want to push it because I don't have a place to stay tonight.
Right.
And it says, such as obtaining counseling for your tendency to react violently, like Robert Norris and I were just talking about. I'm just going to say, sure, I'll take the counseling. I'll, like, talk to a counselor, whatever, and this will just be a big joke, and I'll blow it off, you know? And it's so backwards. It is so backwards from the truth that I'm just going to stay there and remain really, really cool.
Now,
I don't have any dogs now to bite anyone. I'm just going to be...
Carlos, what do you think? Let's get some input from the radio audience and see... We do have a call. It's ringing. All right, then.
Hi there, I'm Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, thank you for the airtime.
Sounds like Lighthouse Linda LeMaster to me.
Advocating for housing now in Santa Cruz.
Have you been listening to our show, Linda?
The last 15 minutes or so.
What's your thoughts, I guess?
I wanted to ask, Gina, has Kimberly Hallinan been invited to this? I bet if you had four or five good people in there.
You know, I'd like Kimberly Hallinan to be there. I haven't gotten in touch with her, actually. I talked to Becky.
Yeah. Can I invite her for you?
Please.
I'll put in the call.
Please.
If I can get her.
Yeah, it's at 3:15.
Cool.
Thank you.
Because I'm pretty sure I can catch her at the Community Action Board
now. I'm so thankful. Thank you, Linda.
And I wanted to say, I hope to be there, but I can't guarantee it.
I mean, your support is so, so needed.
Yeah, I'm real concerned. This might be only the second or third grievance hearing that organization has had. And just from hearing the letter being read on the air, there's a lot of stuff stuffed into one situation, and most of it you shouldn't have to be the one who's accountable for. I mean, I just heard that letter just now, and that's my gut reaction. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll sort it all out later, maybe.
Oh, yeah, it's ludicrous. It's a completely backward situation.
Yeah. Is Paul going to be there?
I don't know. Actually, Karen told me it was completely separate of herself. So I'm not even sure she was.
Yeah, from her point of view, she's not responsible for having been out in the field, let alone evicting people from it.
Well, then
the
question would come up, what about if you do win this hearing and are allowed back under the community resource center, you still have to go before Paul Meursault and his board, which is a different organization.
Not true, because I was kicked off the homeless resource center property, and it had nothing to do with the ISSB.
The ISSB has denied you access to the program, right?
Well, only because the program takes part on the homeless resource center property.
Huh. The right-of-way.
You might check that. I hear you, but it sounds like,
Well, since there's not going to be a field there, you know, I think the important thing is if Jean is clear about what services she wants and needs and is entitled to because they provided federal money for people like herself, then that's what she wants to focus on, you know. And
you
some of the administrative
that.
Questions raised in Karen's letter are just BS or static, let's say, for now.
He should definitely be terminated and kicked off the field.
Yeah. I'm interested in if they've come a long way in terms of knowing how to conduct a grievance hearing since the time when Linda Edwards had to do it, and it was Karen's first, and their board didn't even know what one was.
naive people that they were.
Yeah.
Well, what happened in that situation?
Yeah. What happened in that situation?
Mm-hmm.
We met with, there was no board of directors. The oversight body for Karen's program was a board of directors that was really about getting art into prisons. And Ellen Davidson was the lead person or director of it. And as a result of that hearing and some ideas that came up, Linda went in with myself and an employee of Welfare Parent Support Group, Elaine, and they listened to the three of us a little bit defensively, but they were truly listening for ideas. It led to their founding a board that could pay attention to who they actually were. So a good thing came out of it. But it didn't resolve what we went in there about, which was to clear the air about Linda having been assaulted, get an apology, and try to undo the harm, you know. I mean, they were basically treating her like they were treating you. There was a conflict. She was assaulted by a gang of people, physically assaulted by a woman. You know, a legitimate thing she'd been sent by city officials to do was stomped on a petition. She was just trying to upgrade the quality of the food that people were eating. And considering the amount of money they were getting at the time, and the food had been better when they had no budget, because restaurants were involved in donating things, it seemed reasonable from her point of view, you know.
Yeah,
and she got nowhere with because they didn't have a grieving procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Until she started going to the funding agencies. And then they figured out, oh yeah, we are supposed to do this, aren't we? So it was a very good learning experience, I think, for everyone involved. But no one ever really addressed the real issue that she'd been hurt in a situation where she should have been supported.
Stand the fence up. You know, I actually have a witness to another incident there, where one of her employees pushed me. And I did nothing. And people witnessed this.
Boy, it'd be real nice to have someone like that with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to get a hold of this person right now, but because the grievance hearing is in about 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
If they tell you there's rules when you get there, like, well, we don't want more than 2 or 3 people here, ask to see them in writing and find out when they happened. I think that in reality, in most situations, outside of something overseen by the court system, these things should be negotiable. You know, people on so-called sides, both sides of an issue, should be totally negotiable about what's going to make this work. So, I hope I can be there. So
yeah,
I just want to call in my support.
Thank you. I hope you can get Kimberly Hallin in, please.
Yeah, so I better get on it soon.
But before you do, Linda, I think you recently had a... Did you want to talk about your meeting with Art Danner and Company or not? No, some other time.
I don't know what I would want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could just sort of announce over the air that the sheriff and the district attorney and one of the district attorney's key lawyers were willing to sit down with yourself and me and Robert Flory and Commission for the Prevention of Violence Commission staff person Melissa Jo Kelly and explore the issue of some terrible things surrounding Linda Edwards' death last June.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really want to discuss it until I understand it better myself.
Okay, well, I do invite you to call when you have any information about whether you're going to be, whether you've reached Kimberly
okay.
Carter. And also, you probably want to confer with us at the end of this show because we are going to decide what we want to do with Gina and when to show up.
Well, I'm going to go chase down Kim Hallinan right now and see if she can come at 3:30, so I'll probably miss the rest of the show.
So call Hallinan.
So, but I will try to call you, but I won't be able to.
Actually, it's Carter and Hallinan you're concerned with, right?
I was going to call Kimberly Hallinan because she's mediating.
Right. Okay, good. Good. Call her up, and we'll hope to hear from you again.
Yeah. And you can call the other Kimberly.
Hey, we can all call Kimberly City. Maybe we can get Robert Foley to call Kimberly Argula. Hey.
That's long distance.
That's long distance.
Good luck, Gina. I hope I get to see you today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
And you are still listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, Bathrobe Spears Broadside Civil Rights for the Poor, every Monday and Friday from 10 to sometimes 1 o'clock. We babble on about these issues, and we invite you into the studio if you have anything to say about them, either through the phone lines, or if you want to show up in person, show up at Taco Bell at 9:45 on Monday and Friday. That's at Laurel and Pacific, and I will invite you myself into our top secret facility here in Santa Cruz. This is Pirate Radio. And indeed, on Friday, February 2nd, the case of the FCC versus Stephen Dunifer, who is a major figure in Free Radio Berkeley, will be heard by Judge Claudia Wilkins commencing at 10:30 a.m. There'll be actually a demonstration at 9 at the Oakland Federal Building. And the future of Free Radio Berkeley, as many microwave radio stations, will be affected by this court case. You meet and rally at the 12th Street BART station at 9 a.m., 14th and Broadway in Oakland, and there's going to be a march to the Oakland City Center to the Federal Twin Towers, 1301 Clay Street, where they will hope to pack the courtroom. If you want to hear Free Radio Berkeley, and you have a very sensitive receiver, you can tune in at 104.1 FM, or you can go up to Berkeley and you can hear it with any old radio. And their calling number there is 510-655-7146 for more updated information and reports. In the studio with us is Red Top Robert Flory. Red Top Robert has actually been around a lot of this. He was around when Linda Edwards was filing her complaints against the Free Meal for harassment and physical abuse. He has been around when through Santa Cruz for much of its tenure on and off. He's been in Food Not Bombs and out of Food Not Bombs. He's been hanging out on the street with the vicious Wonton Dave when Wonton was sitting across from the Jabba House and getting flack from that management for doing so. Why don't you join us at the mic, Robert, and tell us, you brought with you a letter you have written to the, I guess, to the San Jose Mercury News in response to one of their editorials.
Good morning. Well, good morning. Actually, no, I never did write that letter, but I hope to. And I did bring the editorial in the San Jose Mercury News day before yesterday.
Well, maybe you can read that editorial or have somebody read it, and then you can comment on what you intend to put in your letter. This letter, the editorial, that is, it refers to campgrounds, which for many of us seems to be one of the only cheap, viable solutions to emergency shelter around, and of course, because it is something of a solution, doesn't provide a lot of paying positions, doesn't provide a lot of bureaucratic structure, doesn't provide buildings and contracts of that sort. It doesn't interest those who give out money and those politicians downtown who regulate such things. But why don't you go ahead with the editorial?
Yeah, I have the editorial here, and I think it's important because it really goes to the heart of a lot of the issues surrounding the idea of homelessness and tolerance of different lifestyles. But this is from the San Jose Mercury News editorial page, and I hope there's someone out there listening. Wednesday, January 10th, San Jose Mercury News. It says, it's titled, No Tent Cities, Please. And the subtitle is, Campground for the Homeless in Santa Cruz is Ill-Conceived. In services for the homeless, Santa Cruz offers a Cadillac model. The city provides shelters, meals, health care, drug treatment, even laundry, mail, and voicemail services. Not satisfied, some advocates are demanding a used VW van model, too. They want the city to set up a campground for folks who dislike indoor shelters. The city council is likely to say no, which is both a compassionate and responsible response. The homeless shouldn't be out in the cold. Homeless campers, now at New Brighton State Beach after being evicted from a vacant lot in the city, have soured even tolerant Santa Cruzans against tent dwellers who insist on the right to live outdoors. They've been aided by some well-meaning advocates in the community who want Santa Cruz to be the first in the nation to set up an outdoor shelter. But no social service agency has signed on to sponsor this venture. Resources are already stretched thin, and examples are non-existent. It's likely that a campground for the homeless would become a lure if the weather and community's generosity weren't enough for permanent campers from everywhere. Advocates argue that indoor shelters force occupants out during the day. Programs rotate from church to church, causing instability for shelter users. They say a campground fosters camaraderie and support, even for those with mental problems, and gives the homeless more self-determination. Certainly, the shelter network needs rethinking. More beds are provided in the winter, while the homeless are expected to make do in other months. But an outdoor shelter, besides being vulnerable to the cold and rain, isn't the answer. Potential difficulties include supervision, sanitation, safety, and sheer numbers. Santa Cruz has done more than its fair share, including giving the homeless a two-week stay at New Brighton at Christmas. It's not a public responsibility to subsidize or accommodate a permanent tent city. And that's the editorial, and I'm lucky I didn't choke on half of it. I wanted to comment on this. It says, here where it says, not satisfied with all these social services that the city of Santa Cruz is providing. Well, it seems that a lot of the people in city government, I know Mike Rotkin was here on Free Radio a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. and he was going on and on about how the city of Santa Cruz provides so many social services for the homeless people. And this article echoes that. It says, the city already provides shelters, meals, healthcare, drug treatment, even laundry, mail, and voicemail services. I think that the government people are missing point here, in that when I was homeless living on the street, I couldn't care less about the social services that were provided for me. I did eat at the free meal, and it was good that that free food was available, but the other services I never used. I never even got food stamps. But what I was concerned about, and still am concerned about, was not social services, but social oppression of homeless people in Santa Cruz. That in Santa Cruz, there's a law that literally makes it illegal to sleep outdoors after 11 o'clock. Also, they've got these six new downtown ordinances, which make it illegal to do all kinds of things downtown, including sitting, panhandling at all kinds of times and locations. And I would gladly trade all the social services in the world to an end of this social oppression. Now, it says, they want the city to set up a campground for folks who dislike indoor shelters. I don't think that's what they want at all. I think that what homeless people want is to be tolerated if in a campground outdoors. The campground that existed at River and Coral Street was unsupervised by the city for many years. It was a self-regulating campground. And sure, it had its share of problems, but at the same time, it wasn't so bad that that people didn't want to go there. People still continued to live there.
Did you ever use this campground yourself, Robert?
No, I never did. I slept there one night, exactly.
Actually, I think we were next to each other on that particular night.
That was, yeah, they were trying to close it down in
1991.
Somewhere.
So how can you speak with authority on this if you've never used the facilities?
Well, I've camped out a lot in Santa Cruz in various locations, just not at that particular location. And, of course, I was camping out illegally, violation of the city's camping ban, sleeping ban. And, well, just from my interactions with other homeless people and my own general feel, I think the city is approaching the problem of homelessness from the wrong direction. They think that they need to provide all these things for the homeless people, like indoor shelters and drug treatment programs, and that the city knows what is best for the homeless people and is going to provide it for them and is already spending hundreds of thousands of dollars providing all these services for the homeless people. Where if they were probably to ask the homeless people would say, well, just leave us alone. We're poor, and maybe we want to live outside, and we're not out to cause trouble. Why can't you just tolerate our existence? Why can't you tolerate the presence of poor people in the community? And I think this is the main point that the city is missing. There's another part in this article. Let's see. Oh, right here. It says the city council is likely to say no, which is both the compassionate and responsible response. The homeless shouldn't be out in the cold. While some people like to live outside, I propose an ordinance whereby office buildings are banned, because after all, those people shouldn't be under fluorescent lighting and breathing recirculated air. It's just not healthy for them. They need to get out in the sunshine and the wind, and that'd probably be better for them. And so this is to make my point, is that the city is trying to say, we know what's best for the homeless, and we're going to provide it for them, but they're missing the point entirely. The point is that we have a society that has all kinds of different people in it, and we need to, as a society, we need to tolerate diversity of lifestyle. And so these are my comments on this particular article, and there's probably not too many of you out there who disagree with me, but if you do, please call in, or even if you do agree with me.
Definitely call in, 427-3772. If any of you wish to play devil's advocate, or who knows, angel's advocate, you know, whatever you want to call it, 427-3772. You are on the air with 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. The show for the last 2.5 hours has been Bathrobes, Peers, Broadsides. I am the Robe, Robert Norris, talking to you. Why Bathrobespierre? Well, you've heard of Robespierre, the French figure in the Revolution. Well, I wear a bathrobe in my sleeping band demonstration, so I call myself Bathrobespierre. Silly? Well, perhaps so. While you're thinking of calling in, let me see if I can query a good question to you, Fury Robert. I noticed on this editorial they talked about moving the homeless out to New Brighton Beach. In fact, it wasn't the homeless who moved out to New Brighton Beach. It was about 40 to 50 campers out of a total of 200 to 300 people who were on that field. And the rest of them were essentially driven off into the bushes, told they could try to line up for the armory or the 56-person church spot. Floors, spaces. And so it was in no way an attempt to provide Cadillac services to homeless people. It was an attempt to remove people from a field that had been promised to them in a verbal contract made, as I said, in November by the people who owned the field. So in a way, in essence, the city was trying to get the property owners off the hook. And it's interesting how the city and the property owners kept throwing the ball back and forth, because the property owners, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as they like to call themselves, had a board meeting in December, and at that board meeting, the head of the board was saying, oh no, we didn't throw them off the field, it was the city that threw them off the field. And of course, when you talk to Mike Rotkin, he tells you, no, it wasn't the city that threw them off the field, it was the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the property owners that did. And this was the same kind of misinformation and buck passing that was going on back in 1991, Robert, when you and I were protesting the decision to close down that property.
Yeah, this editorial is completely misleading. It says Santa Cruz has done more than its fair share, including giving the homeless a 2-week stay at New Brighton at Christmas. Well, as near as I can tell, that was a last-minute thing that they concocted, mostly because they were afraid that if they kicked everybody out of the campground just prior to Christmas, that they would all show up downtown and would be hanging out where the merchants are trying to sell huge amounts of merchandise in the pre-Christmas buying frenzy. And so to avoid that horrible catastrophe, the city came up with this last-minute plan to send the homeless to New Brighton Beach. So the editorial definitely is misleading.
And I'd like to point out, by the way, that you know the shopping is still going on, folks. It's Christmas is over, but the parking structures downtown are full of cars. So people are interested in demonstrating downtown against issues of discrimination, whether it be against the New Brighton Beach campers who are being driven from one campground to another, against the vast majority of homeless people who have to sleep outside illegally at night, against people on the streets and people who are poor who are getting hassled at places like the Java House, the ID building, the bookshop Santa Cruz, against the anti-homeless laws downtown and make it illegal to sit, illegal to peacefully ask for spare change. There is still ample time, and we are still in the middle of a business season here where that could be effectively done downtown. And for those of you who are interested in getting together for some more, shall we say, educational demonstrations for, well, I used to call it Camp Quest Santa Cruz, looking for a legal place to sleep, and those of you who don't want to wait until March 15th, patiently. I don't want to wait till March 15th. March 15th is the date, apparently, that some Save Our Shelter activists have given the city and the county and other interested groups to find an open-air shelter, because the one that was open is going to be closed, and was closed down improperly, illegally, in my opinion, and in violation of their trust with the homeless people. It's not about to be reopened. But let's reopen the discussion a little bit with this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I was listening to Robert, and I listened to him, and I listened to Rotkin last week. And when Rotkin says that we spend more money proportionally on homeless services than any other county in the nation, it's other counties spend similarly, in that that money doesn't go to directly benefit the homeless people's lives, but to the benefit of the people who are servicing their problem. In Santa Cruz, most of the money that went into that shelter went to construction workers, and they didn't hire any homeless people to help in the job. And then it went to university-educated social service professionals and health professionals to analyze the sickness that they have, wanting not to be rented in an apartment somewhere. Karen is actually a really good person, and she's kind of stuck in the middle, you know. I mean, she will lose her job if she joins the ranks of the homeless and complains about the system. And then you'd have somebody else in there that might not be anywhere near as sympathetic whatsoever. But you got a good show there, and I think Robert hit a very important issue on the head. That
we're talking Robert Floyd, huh?
Yeah, who was the person you just had talking about.
Robert,
so it's not all homelessness. A lot of it is self-determined transient lifestyle. People live, you know, outdoors because they like to be outdoors, and it's not a sickness or an illness. And that might be like a smaller percent of the homeless people that really represent that segment, but they are the people that the counties don't want to even recognize at all. That you have the audacity not to want to be in a house.
Well, actually, you yourself have taken on the cause. I'm speaking to Billy, give me your last name, proper pronunciation again.
Caracelli.
Billy Caracelli?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm going to have to give up this Cooley stuff, huh? Caracelli. Boy, I'm going to work on that one. Billy, you're a, what would you call yourself, a tenant activist, an anti-rent activist?
Yeah, that's another whole action. We're going to take it 2 years if it takes that long to get 10,000 pledges to join a rent strike, and then we're going to challenge rent as a feudal system of indentured servitude that's already outlawed by the Constitution, and people just have never organized to exercise their right to be unrented by property. So it's like the contract is really rented by property contract. You're not renting a house. The house is renting you. You're being torn apart. You're being torn from your investment in property, and all that money is being credited to someone else because you don't own property. So it's based on property. If you own property, you pay monthly to own, and if you don't own property, you pay monthly and someone else gets the credit. It's, you know, going back to the 1800s, 1700s, where if you own property, you could vote, and if you didn't own property, you couldn't vote. So we just have to make that contest, and we will win.
How can people who are interested in assisting this particular cause get in touch with you?
Oh, if you want to be in a pledge, you get a pledge packet and see what the rent strike contest is going to be look like in the courts. You can send us a postcard, P.O. Box 7059, Santa Cruz 95061, and that would be Tenant Congress.
Can you repeat that address?
P.O. Box 7059, Santa Cruz 95061, to be in a nationwide rent strike sometime, looks like the end of 97.
Okay.
Right.
Any more comments on
Yeah, I just want to say you have a good show. I appreciate being able to hear both the mayor and Robert Flory, just because it's very clear the difference. I mean, they're talking about two different things, and no wonder that they're not understanding each other.
We're trying to talk about the same thing.
I mean, I think Robert understands Michael's position, which is he's in this Rotkin's in this ridiculous position of having to justify not letting homeless people have fair, free trade on the mall selling their wares, because the merchants don't have fair free trade. So because the merchants are burdened with all these taxes for parking, even if they ride their bike, and for manicured purple dresses on every flower, marching flower down the mall, and they get taxed up the get-go. So because they have an unfair situation, it's only democratic that we be unfair to the homeless.
To everyone else.
What I'm hearing Rockin say. And for social progressive feminist activists, you know, that's not even their platform. He's got somebody else's platform there besides his own. So in on that, I will close, and I have to get back to something else here. Keep up the good work.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in.
And that leaves the phone line open at 427-3772. Robert, any thoughts on anything that Billy said that you wanted to add?
He made a good point that the city is spending a lot of money on social services, but then how much of that money is, or how does that money translate into what the homeless actually see? And again, the cost of buildings and staff and administrative salaries probably eats up a huge amount of, I don't have any of the figures, but probably takes a huge amount of that money, and so the services that the homeless are actually receiving are probably totally disproportionate to the amount of money that the city is spending on the homeless, so-called homeless. And then the merchants downtown, they're stuck themselves, in a sense that they've been somehow or other they've learned that that homeless people are evil and will their sheer presence will cause profits to go down, and profits are the number one thing for the merchant to be worried about, and it's really unfortunate that they have adopted this attitude instead of a broader, a more compassionate attitude towards society's problems. So those are a couple of comments on what Billy said. Sure.
Yeah, I think it's well said, and I hope that you can put that into a letter.
But Free Radio Santa Cruz welcomes you. You're on the air.
Hi. The Armory opened when, November 1st or December 1st?
The Armory actually opened December 3rd, I think.
Okay, and there were only about 40 or 50 people who took the ride up there. Everybody else stayed in the field.
I think they were actually less. Yeah.
Okay, so, and then as that went on over two, three weeks, Citizens Committee realized, hey, we're losing money because everybody that they get up to the Armory, they get a certain amount of money for that.
Now, that I don't know.
Oh, sure.
If they
filled up with 140 bodies, they get more money than if they filled up for 50 bodies, and they get quite a bit of money. They had just $1 million in emergency food and shelter grant given to them, and they're not going to get $1 million next year or three years after. I don't know what period of time it covered, but they got an enormous amount of change.
Now, we're on the line to Crossroads Chris Brazda. You're an activist who's done a lot of writing on this subject on the Internet.
Little lately, because I haven't been down there in a while, but I'd like some homeless to call in and say as to how this went down, how the Citizens Committee actually convinced these people. There was a storm with 80-mile-an-hour winds. It rained about 4 inches, and many people took their tents and checked them in to handed their property over to the Citizens Committee, and these tents were stored, and they never got them back. Because after they let the storm take it down and showed the press the leaking toilets that they've had out there full of crap for years that they use as an excuse. I mean, this media this gimmick that they use to show the cameras how horrible conditions are back here because it rained and a little urine leaked onto the field showed how incompetent they are. At the Tuesday City Council meeting, I said, you want to give Darling and Marceau $1 million? This is a million-dollar project when they can't even keep porta-potties from leaking and use it as an excuse They had a sign up there saying how dangerous it was and all that. And whereas the weather has been perfect for camping since then, and many of those people who gave their tents up to these people who have a financial interest in driving them out of the field, not only so that they can make this extremely expensive halfway house under the disguise of homeless. It is not a homeless project.
You're talking about community
housing. Right, right. But so that they can fill the armory with the bodies that justify their emergency food and shelter grants.
I see Dan Hopkins kind of lingering on the periphery. I think he wants to talk to you on this, Chris. You want to talk to him about this? Talking to you, Chris. You want to talk to Dan about this?
Sure.
Here's Dan.
The one thing that I just wanted to add to this was to your conversation and the conversation with Robert just before.
Can you hear Dan?
Yes,
Chris?
I can.
Was that the interesting thing about this is that there is a person in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless who receives somewhere between $26,000 and $28,000 a year for half-time work. And
this is Dodgem Daryl Darling, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I hear. And the interesting thing about this is there are Save Your Shelters Committee, which was set up by the homeless and community activists, have handled the money donations and the food donations and things that we needed to protect ourselves from the weather and stuff. They've done this all out of the goodness of their heart. And that this is the actual viable answer to homeless situation is the homeless running it with the activists, because we have not received one single penny in wages, and yet we make sure that the money is dispersed in the right direction to take care of our financial needs. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has other ideas and other things on their mind, mainly collecting money and wages and things like this, and pretty high wages at that. Can you imagine how long the open air shelter could have gone on for another $26,000, you know? And I just wanted to add that. Go ahead, Chris.
$26,000? I thought you had cost you the
town
about
$700 or $800
a month to pay the garbage and the porta potties.
Yeah.
And that was raised and could have been raised. The campers had voted, you know, except for the storm, if they could have had access to their property merely because they couldn't have stored it, if they could have got it and secured it themselves and got it back, they certainly would have probably set up again had the weather been good. So the Citizens Committee used this only storm, the worst storm, and they were counting on the weather.